from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Have you ever gotten to that point on a Friday and you're at work and you just say, I'm done. I don't feel like working the rest of the day.
Is that you?
Yeah, that's me.
Oh, well, we don't have that luxury. You just got back. You had 2 days of recovery.
That's why it's even harder to work. I'm out of work mode.
Oh, okay.
So Ursula, you mean to tell me you've been that good of an employee your whole life? You never get there on a Friday and just be like, you know what? I'm done. You don't do that?
Of course, we all do it.
But I'm doing it right now.
But knowing that we have a show and we're on the air, I will at least fake it through the end of the show.
Well, this is how you can know that I'm off work. Because our next guest, I won't have one disagreement with him the entire time.
Promise.
Who is our next guest?
Michael Medved is on the line with us right now. Of course, Michael Medved hosts a show bearing his own name on 770 KTTH. But more importantly, he's one of our favorite people, and he is on the line right now. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Ursula, and good morning, G, but maybe you're checked out, so...
Yeah, he'll jump in here in a second. But I want to talk about one of the big stories of the day, which is this railroad strike, or the threat of one, which has now been averted because of the vote in Congress. I want to get your take on it, Michael.
Obviously, the right to strike is a very important thing, and people are entitled. But the difficulty with this is that there are 8 different unions that had already reached agreement,
right,
and there are 4 unions that hadn't. And actually, I think that President Biden handled this reasonably well. And it's a tremendous relief that they were able to get, except for the very extreme right, people like Josh Hawley, and the very extreme left, people like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, all except 15 U.S. senators voted for the agreement. And I think that's an important thing, and it's good for our economy, and it's basically one of those things where you sort of wipe your forehead and say, well, that was a close one, because it could have really, really had a devastating impact on the U.S.
Michael, what am I missing here, though? Like, shouldn't all these workers be able to get the 7 days of paid sick time?
They probably will. And,
okay,
you know,
And again, the
idea that this is, yes, it is a public interest issue, and the Senate has a role in it, I think is there. This is the whole idea of having federal regulations and a Department of Labor, is to avoid some kinds of devastating strikes. This is one of those that, especially since it appears that they will get most of the concessions regarding sick days that they want.
Well, that's a good thing. I want to go back to, do you think this is going to happen soon, though? Like, this is something, because you don't think that there is going to potentially be any type of strike or anything that's going to happen that's going to make this. I mean, you think that these 7 days of work, of sick paid sick time, will happen very soon?
Yeah, I think so. I think eventually. Look, the point about this is that a lot of people are very, very cynical about the government. I think that's right. I think it's appropriate. However, when you've got agreement of an overwhelming majority in the House of Representatives, and you've got an agreement of more than 2/3 of the U.S. Senate, and the agreement of the President of the United States, the only thing that could mess this up at this point would be some kind of court decision, and I don't think that's going to get in the way of a solution to the railroad strike. And this is one of those satisfying problems that sort of arises and actually is amenable to a solution, which I think is appropriate. But it sounds like another era, you know, doesn't it? When you, first of all, railroads are like another era. And again, this is basically not supposed to be a strike that's impacting passenger rail, but it would because Amtrak uses the same tracks, and the government is already so tremendously entangled with the rail industry. I just didn't see that there was a way that the senators or congressmen or the president and his cabinet could walk away from this.
I know that the unions are unhappy with those who voted in support of it. And, of course, President Biden has always been very proud of his support for labor. And so, you know, I see that people are saying, hey, he turned his back on us, et cetera. But again, if you look at the ramifications, if this had happened, you know, to the tune of $2 billion in losses a day, that's not something that could have been something that our fragile economy could have withstood at this point. So I'm in agreement with you there, Michael. But if we could talk about something else that President Biden is doing. He is reportedly asking Democrats to move the first primary to South Carolina, which, of course, is a state that saved his bacon in the 2020 primaries. What are your thoughts on that?
Look, I think reorienting the primary calendar is a very necessary thing to do. I'm not sure that's the right way to reorient the primary calendar, but the basic point is that starting out with Iowa and New Hampshire, which are two of the least diverse states in the union, is probably not an appropriate way to begin. Our political system is broken. The way we choose candidates, it's broken. And I think the idea of having some larger, more significant states like Michigan and potentially Minnesota that they're talking about that they would bring up in the primary calendar, I think that's the right thing to do. I hate to be agreeing so much with President Biden twice in the same day.
I know.
But
in
I think he's right about this.
In reality, Michael, according to some of our listeners, you are a Democrat.
Yeah.
Right. You are not a most Republican. Most Democrats don't agree with him on this.
I know.
This.
That's the funny thing.
I will say this. I do believe that the state that I would say would be Michigan. I think that that state right there would be the most fair when it comes to the diversity of America. If I could put it in one state, I would say Michigan would be that state.
Well, again, to pick one state over another, I mean, look, California is very diverse. California has a disproportionately high number of Asians, which is different from many other states. But the point about all this is the primary schedule goes on too long. Our campaigns go on too long. And while they're mm-hmm. fixing this and juggling who goes first and who mm-hmm. goes second and who goes third, basically what they should do is shorten the entire primary season, because this thing is an ordeal. The only people who really benefit from this are campaign consultants and the people who sell advertising. And for goodness sake, we continue from that. December is usually when they have the Iowa caucuses. You run from December and they keep going with the primaries and the caucuses usually till May or June. And that's just not a healthy thing for our republic. And people have talked about having a national primary. And again, that takes away the idea of regional power. I think if they clustered the campaign schedule more so that you didn't have every single Tuesday there was another primary and there were another caucuses, if they put them together so they would have maybe a total of 3 or 4 days during the primary season where they had all of the elections, so that it could become less of an obsession, I think that would be positive to change.
Calling Dr. Michael Medved on the diagnosis, the post-election diagnosis of the Washington State GOP. Now, Bill Bryant wrote an op-ed for the News Tribune calling on the state GOP to make some changes to win in 2024. First, he says the GOP lost nationally because of the repeal of Roe v. Wade and called on Republicans in Washington to pass a right to privacy in our state. Second, he blames former President Trump's influence on the party for the loss in this state, stating, quote, suburban voters might have liked chatting with that nice Republican who rang their doorbell, but they weren't going to support the party of Trump. So stop being the party of Trump. The Washington State Republican Party should send a letter to Mar-a-Lago acknowledging the former president's service and letting him know Washington will support a different nominee in 2024. So, will the Washington State GOP make a move like that? Your thoughts, sir?
Not quite that dramatic and not quite that explicit, but there has to be that kind of maneuver. I mean, the one thing that I think is depressing to Republicans is when you had a mainstream acceptable candidate. Losing with Lauren Culp is one thing, as we did in the governor's race 2 years ago. But losing with Tiffany Smiley, who is not crazy and not unacceptable and not an election denier or any of that, I think it shows that kind of move, de-Trumpifying the GOP, is going to be necessary in order to get that 40% in King County. Republicans do not need to win King County to win statewide, but they do need to get above 30%. And if you're 40% in King County and you're a Republican, you're golden. That's how Dino Rossi, when he won the governorship, and I think he actually did, but that's another story. He ended up losing on the 4-3 count, as you recall. Mm-hmm. But the way that that you can do that is just by performing better in not the city of Seattle, because downtown Seattle is going to be tough for any Republican or any moderate, any conservative, but to go after voters who used to be Republicans in suburbs like Bellevue and Kirkland. And the idea that those should go so overwhelmingly Democratic, and that King County is a place where there are only the briefest stirrings, mildest stirrings of conservative activity. I think getting that conservative activity away from Trump and conspiracy theories, and by the way, the conspiracy theories are toxic. They just are toxic. Anything hinting on QAnon or the election conspiracies. You'll notice that Rudy Giuliani isn't doing really well right now.
What's he doing? I haven't even heard from him in a while. And in fact, I feel like ever since Trump announced, I feel like that has been almost more quiet than I expected.
Well, it's been more quiet because of this dinner at Mar-a-Lago with Ye and Fuentes. Nick Fuentes. This idea that it's been quiet. I mean, it would be good for Trump if it were a little bit more quiet. But the fact is, I think what's very telling here is even when it comes to Herschel Walker, who was his hand-picked candidate in Georgia, Herschel Walker doesn't want Trump to come down and campaign for him. And Trump has agreed not to. And again, I think that indicates an attempt to de-Trumpify the party for the party's own health. And basically, we lost the election, I think, or had disappointing outcomes, and that because Republicans still took control of the House of Representatives. Because basically, the party out of power usually does well in midterms because it's a judgment that voters make on the incumbent president. But unfortunately, Trump was so prominent and so involved in this whole process. This was not really a referendum on Biden this time. It was a choice that people had between Biden and Trump. And that's not a healthy position for the party to be in going forward.
You know, it's interesting is because I think that this dinner, the dinner with Kanye, the dinner with Nick Fuentes, that Donald Trump did, I truly believe. I used to, and you would come on and I would say to you, I don't know. It seems like Donald Trump's going to always be around. The GOP is going to be the party of Trump, the party of Trump. Finally, I think this right here, this week, this past week, I think that is the end of Donald Trump. And the reason, another reason why I believe that, because just yesterday, there was a tweet that the GOP had up. It was for, the House GOP had a tweet up for 2 months that said in the tweet how it talked about Elon Musk. And it had basically this embarrassing tweet of, it basically went on there, it goes Kanye West, it goes Kanye, Elon, Trump. That was up for 2 months, and finally yesterday, the House GOP Twitter finally deleted that. And I think when they deleted that, I think this week, especially the week that Kanye's had, I ain't even going to ask you about that one. I think,
but he's suspended from Twitter now.
I mean, it took.
I know it got that bad. Finally,
it took for him to put the Star of David with a swastika in the middle for Elon to basically say, okay, I've had enough. Not the months of anti-Semitism that's been happening by Kanye. Not Twitter before Elon Musk suspending him. But it took finally that. And I think that this week, all of the stuff with Kanye, I think was a bad week for Donald Trump as well.
Well, it clearly was. I mean, is he going to have Kanye back for dinner after yesterday? I mean, Kanye with Alex Jones, making Alex Jones look good and sound good. And Kanye saying he loves the Nazis and the Nazis don't get enough credit for all the good things they did. And I'm still waiting for Kanye West's list of all the wonderful achievements of Nazi Germany.
This is what I'm saying, Michael, and I think we can agree the GOP cannot be connected to that. And I think that what was connecting them was, you imagine, the week that Kanye had was right after the dinner with Donald Trump.
No, exactly. And again, it's almost as if to say, well, Trump may want me to be considered mainstream. I'm not mainstream. I am that beep crazy. And there is that aspect, too. He blames his Jewish psychiatrist, by the way. He really does.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Michael, I don't know. I it's hard for me to even continue on with Kanye because for so long people have given him such a pass, and it finally, I don't know, maybe this week, these last 2 days, people's like, okay, we've had enough. But they didn't
again,
have it before.
They had a question about Lincoln said that if slavery isn't wrong, nothing is wrong. Okay, if Kanye isn't unacceptable, then nothing is unacceptable. And if you're going to accept sympathy for the Nazis and Holocaust denial, I mean, come on. And swastika on your Twitter account, not so great.
Mm. Well, we always appreciate your time, Michael. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Have a wonderful week.
You too.
And happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
All right. Coming up next on the G and Ursa Show, this was a very good article that I read yesterday. And this article talked about the war on free New York tuition. We'll talk about how that led to the skyrocketing of college admissions and the price for that. We'll do that next. G and Ursa.
To the G and Ursula Show. Happy Fresh Friday to all of you. And as you know, on our show, we often talk about the student debt crisis, the ridiculously high tuition that colleges are charging these days, and we often get into some very spirited debates. But if you've ever wondered how we got to this point, there is a great article in USA Today, G, that you pointed out to us that explains a lot. So, and it really kind of details what happens when you first make college free and then what happens when it's taken away. So back in the 70s, every high school graduate in New York had the right to go to college for free. And when the city university system made the change practically overnight from an 80% white institution to one of the most diverse in the nation. But by 1975, 70% of new students were people of color. Many were working class Italian, Jewish, and Irish students. And then there was a huge political backlash. In 1970, Vice President Spiro Agnew railed against black student militancy. He said too many black kids were getting into college. He also said that open admission was sweeping unqualified students into college on the wave of this new socialism. And then it was also something that was under constant assault from presidents like Reagan and Nixon. So the New York colleges stopped open admission in 1976. And instead of the nation following that first successful model of offering free tuition and open admissions, the country went the other way. And of course, we have talked about what's happened since. There's $1.7 trillion of student debt, tuitions. I mean, often people are paying the price of what could be a huge down payment on a home.
Right.
But this was an article that really moved you.
It moved me. Well, the first thing that stood out in this article was, first, I didn't know that for 130 years, there was free tuition in municipal colleges in New York. So what that means, if you graduated high school in New York, you could go to college for free. 130 years, it was free. And then in 1970, that's when the student population, there were students of color, black, Puerto Rican, Jewish, all different types of ethnicities were allowed to get in there. How long do you guys think this program lasted? It only lasted another 6 years and it was done. Now, in a speech in 1970 in San Francisco, then Roger Freeman, who was the Nixon and Reagan advisor, he told the assembled press that educating the working class could lead only to no good, probably even fascism. He goes on to say that this is danger. We have to be selective on who we allow to go through higher education. The reason why this stood out to me so much is it was so hard for me to just visualize. Like, this isn't 1930. This isn't 1910. This isn't 1850. This is 1970. So there's a lot of you listening right now. You were born in 1970. And so for previous to 1970, if you graduated college in New York, you graduated high school in New York, you can go to college for free. And then in 1970, when they allowed it to be integrated and people were allowed from different colors and ethnicities to be able to join, it took 6 years for it to be canceled. So that stood out to me. And then I found out, Governor Rockefeller from California. And the Rockefeller, they figured out.
The rich folk?
Yeah. They figured out, because usually banks did not want to touch these student loans, because back then they were like, this is not a good loan to touch. What are you going to do? Go and repo the degree?
Nah, they wanted to know. They're saying this could be big business. So we stop this free education stuff and make it for those that are able to afford it. And then for those that are able to afford it, that's great. But there's going to be a lot of people that are going to take loans out. And so the loans are loans that can't go away. So you can get an LLC, do all this business, Donald Trump, and then file for bankruptcy and start over again. But if you get that student loan, you file for bankruptcy. As you guys know, that student loan is there. So I was just so fascinated with never hearing this story before and seeing exactly. So this isn't an opinion. This is fact.
Yeah. What happened in history? How sad is it that when it went from an 80% white institution, so when we're talking about the City University system in New York, to one of the most diverse in the nation, and then that was actually seen as, wait a minute, we're putting unqualified students in here. This is not a good thing. This is, that's actually really sad.
Yeah. And I made a mistake. I'm sorry. I was going too fast. I mean, the speech was in California. Governor Rockefeller was in New York, and it was him that was like, yeah, we got to do away with this whole free tuition. That's not working. But again, I just want to just really drive this home. It was okay until it was integrated. For 130 years, it was free. It became integrated. Oh, by the way, there was clear success. There were people going on, becoming doctors and becoming lawyers and doing all of these great things. But they couldn't have that continue, Ursula, because one of the things they talked about, they wanted, here's a quote from the Nixon administration. They said they wanted a return to fiscal and personal responsibility. This is the same administration that started the war on drugs. Huh. Coming up next, it's time for Scenarios. Happy Friday. G and Ursula. I don't know what it is about this song, but when this song just played, Nick, it brought me back to the sock hop days. Did anybody go to a sock hop?
Yes. I was beyond my sock hop years by the time this was.
I don't even know what that is. That's before my time.
Yeah.
You dance on the gym floor with your socks.
Yes. Yeah, this was being
doing
played.
The moonwalk over there.
Yeah.
The stinky anyway, feet ball.
Thank you for bringing me down memory lane there. Let's get to scenarios.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
Hope you guys can help me with this. My boyfriend is a good guy, but he has a problem. He bought a new video game system, and he's addicted to it. He started playing with it day and night, and I mean all the time. Lately, he has been calling in sick to work so he can stay home and play. Then he was out of pay leave, so he started lying to his boss about why he couldn't come in. Well, the boss rightfully is not paying him for the time he's taken off. Finally, got his last warning. The boss called, and I picked up the phone. He asked where my boyfriend was and whether he was coming to work. I straight up said no because he was up all night playing video games. She told me to tell him not to bother coming back and that his final paycheck would be arriving in the next 48 hours. 2 hours later, he woke up and called me. I was at work and he said he got a text from his boss saying he was fired. I said, yeah, I know. She called for you and I talked to her. He's furious and says I didn't have his back and that he had all this under control until I screwed things up. This is going to be a big problem in my household because, number one, we're going to be losing a paycheck and that's not good, so that's gonna hurt. But this is not my fault. He has to take responsibility, right? What should I do in this situation? 888-973-5476 is the State Roofing Check text line. Ursula, you up the bat first.
Okay, what did he do with the boss? Sorry, I just wanted to make sure I heard that correctly. Or what did she do?
She told him, like, she said, is he coming to work? And she says, probably not, because he was up playing video games all night and he's sleeping. And then she says, and then the boss says, hey, okay, no bothers. Just tell him to, his check will be there in the next 48 hours, his final check. And then the boss sends a text letting him know that they're done.
Okay, so there are a couple of parts to this. So I would say that, first of all, she's not wrong to be bothered. He clearly has a gaming addiction. And there have been studies that have shown that as many as 60 million people in this in around the world are suffering from a gaming disorder. I just Googled it.
Did you look that up?
Yes.
Doing scenarios?
Why do you think she missed the detail?
Yeah, exactly. Because it's a real thing. You know, it is a real thing. And there's a difference between, hey, I like to play video games a lot. Okay, fine. It might be annoying. But when someone's starting to miss work, stop, you know, not eating meals because they're so into it, that's to the point where it's an addiction. He needs that, like, hit.
Yeah.
Right?
Have you ever been addicted to anything, Ursula?
Yes.
Oh.
Sugar.
Oh,
sugar.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm not, I talk about how there are times when if you go to Vegas, for example, and you're going ding, 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 and suddenly it's 3 o'clock in the morning.
Facts.
Right?
Facts.
I mean, you know that you can get so hyper focused on something, but I would know if it's an addiction if, hey, I can't stop doing it, or I start calling in, or I start, you know.
Yeah.
So it is an issue. So that's one thing. And he needs to get help for that problem, and it needs to be addressed, and she needs to get serious about, hey, you know, I'm not okay with this. This is not how I want to live.
Should she just leave him?
Tell her, his boss. I mean, I would have just left that detail out. Why did she have to say, well, he's been up on it. What did she expect the
boss
to do?
Should she keep him? Should she keep him? I think she needs to leave. Get out.
Yeah,
get out now.
I mean, I'm not going to recommend getting rid of... It all depends on whether he's willing to get help.
Would you stay with the man?
Probably not. But, I mean, again, I don't know how long they've been dating.
Yeah.
Et cetera.
Chef, what you talking about?
Okay, well, I am not shocked at all. Have you guys ever heard the phrase, hell hath no fury, like
yes.
a woman scorned?
Oh, yeah.
There is an entire category of memes on social media sites like Reddit called Gamers Ignoring Their Girlfriends, in which you see a young man with a massive pair of headphones on in his, you know, $1,000 gaming chair working away at World of Warcraft. Meanwhile, his girlfriend is standing right next to the chair in a nice sexy pair of lingerie, and she's taking a photo, and he's not looking at her. He's just looking at the screens. So, I mean, there is an entire category of people who ignore their entire personal life and the best possible things about their personal life for the sake of their games. These are people who clearly want to be single. I think you gotta go.
Hey, we got a text in, 360. I've been addicted to the G and Ursula show for a few years now.
Okay.
I need help. I spend too much time texting and listening and not enough time working. And I just want to tell you, if you're somebody and you have a G and Ursula show addiction, let me just tell you, I've already did some research. And by the way, you guys know what kind of research I do in the morning time. And in my research, I found that addiction is very good for you.
Yes.
It's very good for you.
And the person who texted that in basically disagrees with us on everything.
Yeah.
But we appreciate you.
And real quick, I just want to say, the only advice I have, leave this dude. I'm seriously. It is so hard to pay bills in 2022. Got that in. It's so hard to pay bills in 2022. You don't need your significant other playing video games. Come on now.
Well, I'm not into giving out personal business, like I said before in previous shows, when it comes to even helping out coworkers with some time off. But it must be a problem if she's fussing up about it to the boss at the risk of a job in her own household. I mean, at this point, the cat's out of the bag. Move on with the dude while he slumbers after a marathon of Call of Duty or something. My suggestion, get yourself with a guy with some big boy pants on instead of a guy with the sole purpose of saving for the next Xbox 720 or something like that.
Wow, look at that. The woman on the show is the only one who says I wouldn't necessarily leave him right away.
I know.
What's up with this?
You know what, Ursula? I think I figured it out. I think the advice you give is different from the Ursula standards. There's no way in the world you would have stayed rocking all these years with Long Live Mark if he had a video game addiction.
Oh, you're correct.
We're correct there. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so from here on out, all of your advice has to be from the Ursula standard.
Okay, okay, okay.
So should she leave him?
Probably.
Ursula's so nice. Hey, coming up next on the G and Ursula show, it's the favorite part of the show. Agree to disagree is G and Ursula.